Well, this is part two of the Neil Peart tribute podcast from D's Practice Pod. And my guest today is Adam Pliss. And he is with a fantastic tribute band, Mystic Rhythms. And I saw these fellas play back a few years ago at Paramount in Huntington. It was the plan to have him in months ago, but then the world stopped. So he's here today, and we're going to have a nice conversation with him. Hello, sir. How are you?
Andrew, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here.
You know, yeah, under the circumstances, you know, I was tested. I don't know if you were, you know, everybody's been tested. Yeah, I'm well. I feel good.
Knock wood.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you here. So, because of the fact that you are playing the Neil role in your band, you are absolutely a get to have on the tribute. So let's get right into it. Well, firstly, when did you first hear Rush?
Interesting. I was 13 years old. I was already playing 4 years of flute in school, and I went over for a barbecue or something, and he brought me up to his room, and there was a poster of Rush. And there was this beast of a kit, his original kit with all the bells, and it had all the bells and whistles, you know, like we joke.
Right.
And they were in their robes. It was one of the older pictures. I don't know. I was 13, so I was born in 67. So it was 1980. So, you know, the albums that they had at that time, they had a poster, and I was just blown away. And I
was it kind of a collage?
I just remember just being focusing on Neil. I remember seeing I remember Neil like kind of the center of it and high up.
Right.
And then there was Getty, there was Alex. I just remember seeing this beast, tubular bells behind this thing, and he had this great mustache, long hair, you know.
Yes.
It was he was the man, he had an expression on his face, like he makes the greatest expression. I think I was 13 years old, and that instantly had me tapping. I was like, oh my God, I gotta tap. And I just started to tap. Maybe I tapped my foot before, but I really wasn't drum inspired, so to speak, until that picture. Literally, it was that picture that all of a sudden in my brain, I don't want to play the flute anymore. I want to play the drums.
So that changed your musical life.
Completely. Completely. Right. Wow. And when I did go up to, I did hear Xanadu. That was the first song I ever heard. And I never heard such a long song before.
Wow. That was my next question.
Xanadu. That was it. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm jumping.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, that's a great song. Again, their epic period, you know, where the 70s was, you know, everything was a story, everything was longer, you know. I can't decide what stuff that they've done that I love the most, but that's the thing about Rush, is that they have periods, and they weren't satisfied to be the same band for 40-odd years, you know?
Yeah, wow, right.
So, what was the first album you bought?
Believe it or not, that was a late bloomer when it came to really getting me into it. And I got to tell you, it was Grace Under Pressure. But it was, you know, I started at 13. I was a late bloomer, and I didn't play drums really well. So I got into the electronic drums right away. So I really appreciated the electronics that once Neil switched over. And that was really when I just so got into Rush. So that was probably another few years later, 84, 85. You know, and then into the 90s, I loved all the well. But yeah, I guess it was really the electronic era, though, to me, that was such a. I guess because I was such a bad drummer, so I could put on the headphones, you know, and
right.
really not make a loud noises.
Right, like, right.
You know, I had tin can drums. My first drum kit was like a little, you know, beat up used kit. And I yep. was just hitting stuff. I didn't know what to do. And I didn't have proper instruction at the time. So it took me some time to really understand the drums. So electronic drums really helped. I took to that. And then it came with different pre-programmed styles and stuff of other genres, you know, samba, salsa, reggae, you know, so that kind of helped too. But
sure.
yeah, anyway.
But that's interesting. How many times did you see them live?
Let's see. I saw them the first early shows I went to see them was in Florida, the Sunrise Musical Theater, and I think it was 16 or 17. And there was a riot there. A big riot happened. I think the story was Rush was late or something may have happened to their equipment, so they didn't open the gates and they wouldn't let anyone in. And I just remember rioting and then police and I think Rush banned them from coming to that show. So I remember going down to Miami and seeing them. So there was a Miami gig that I saw. That was, I think, my first gig that I saw. The last one, one of the most beautiful one, was up in Montage Mountain in Scranton, PA. What a beautiful place to see.
Yeah, I've not been.
A Rush show. But I've been to... I guess since the Grace Under Pressure tour. I've seen them. So
okay.
So
for like each tour?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Let's see. I'm drawing a blank now thinking of it. But yeah, I've seen them maybe about 15, 16 times, I guess.
Wow.
More than a dozen times.
Well, that's great.
But yeah, I've had an opportunity to see them, you know, a couple times a tour. And the last one was Time Machine, which was just was it Time Machine? That was the last one.
Yeah, like the Clockwork Angels tour.
Yeah, Clockwork Angels.
Yeah, that's the last time I saw them. I didn't get a chance on their 40th anniversary tour. I saw them on the 30th, but not the 40th. And
right.
You know, that kind of stinks because then we found out that. There was going to be no more Rush. And, you know, I always held out hope because of the little drought from 97 when you know, Neil had all of that terrible stuff with his family happen.
Yeah.
And he just...
That's so
sad. Yeah, and he took that sabbatical. But then he came back, you know? I figured he might...
Vapor Trails.
Yeah.
That was so great.
Wow! Yeah, yeah, a nice comeback. You know, and
that
so
was
much...
just yeah, that was such a great tour too when it came back to. I think it was a rough time, right, with interviews and everything. Everybody wanted to chat with him, but it was a little.
Yeah, and we all know that he was a very private guy, and he really didn't like, you know, I don't think that he was necessarily opposed to interviews, but you know, a personal. What's the word I'm looking for? I'm drawing a blank too.
Yeah, just a tough scenario. You know,
yeah.
Geddy and Alex said, you know, hey, you know, because he wasn't really showing up. I think when they did the Brazil interview, when they did what was it, Rush in Rio?
Yes.
You know, I think it was a little shy on, you know, hey. We don't really want Neil in the spotlight to really kind of, we're afraid everybody's going to kind of ask some questions. It might be a little awkward, you know?
Well, they were sensitive to his, you know.
Yeah.
Well, if you watch that thing that they did 10 or so years ago.
That rock.
Behind the lighted stage.
The lighted stage? Oh.
Yeah, yeah, you know that they used the line from because I can't pretend a stranger is a long-awaited friend. And said, that's Neil. That's, you know, he wrote it because that's the way he felt.
Right.
You know? And Limelight being what Limelight is, I guess he had a problem with it constantly.
Mm.
You know? Boy, can you imagine having as much adoration as that guy did and having a problem with it? You know, at least you don't get a big head.
Yeah.
You know? But, if you could ask Neil a question, because, you know, you've really had to get into his brain, being as what it is that you do is try to replicate all of his, you know, his musical efforts. But you also must read the lyrics because they do sort of inform what the drum part is.
Yeah.
So you're really in his head. If you could ask him something, what would you ask him?
Yeah, interesting. Just how has his parts come up, you know? And but, you know, I've read a lot of stories on, you know, like Ghost Rider. I was able to read that. And
yep, I read that.
What a great story. But I know he had travels and stuff. I guess that's where he was inspired. But I always wondered how he came up with some of the lyrical parts, right? That was one question. The others were, you know, why the left hand, or why, you know, it's interesting watching the videos that he has. He spoke about when he was doing the Counterparts album that he had all these cool percussive ideas and using real acoustic hand drums, you know, conga and djembe and stuff behind his kit.
Mm-hmm.
But the songs didn't call for it. And I always, like, wondered about that question. It's like, wait a second, you know, it's so interesting. He wrote these lyrics, or he's designed drum parts, and I'm not sure how he wrote. I mean, he explained a little bit a few times how they wrote, like, he would send Geddy, I thought, at certain times of, in the 90s maybe, was sending him drum machine parts or something. I wasn't sure. But I know a lot of the parts are just, you know, came from him. I mean, you know,
right.
You know, his heart, his soul. And just always wonder, yeah, how do you know, some great hemisphere fills and, you know, you know, like, what the, how does this, you know, the fill for Tom Sawyer, where did that come from? And why, you know, like, and how did you fit that? I guess multiple questions. If I had one question, wow, that's a really tough, that's a great question.
Well, for but a guy, yeah, I realize it's a tall order to answer that one, considering the fact that, you know, he was a cerebral guy and he is as respected as he is in the musical community. It is tough to narrow it down to one question, but,
yeah.
Yeah.
Good one. Yeah, you know, everything runs through my head, you know. Like, I had questions about, you know, when he was wearing the bandanas and why. And then it was answered, you know, to keep the sweat out of his eyes.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's really genius. Yeah, when I wear a hat, you know, it does help to not sweat so much into my eyes and
sure.
stuff. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, and
that's a long show. You know, it's a long show, especially doing what has to be done for
yeah.
that show. You got a lot of, you know, if you were in a little jazz quartet, it would be tough because of the fact that you have the stage lights. But yeah, he was getting some aerobics done up there.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I guess he had to really work out too, ride his bike and get some exercise behind
yes.
that.
Yes.
I know I did to attempt to play some of the
yeah,
songs.
To get
Man.
The stamina to do it.
It's not easy. Just playing, you know, 16ths with Tom Sawyer. Come on, you know, and playing it smoothly and comfortably, so, you know, it's like done right. You know,
yes.
that's really hard.
It is.
It's so
it
hard.
Is. Yeah.
It's great.
Well, again, from that one documentary, it says I'll never get tired of playing Tom Sawyer. Because it's really difficult to play, and I feel good every time I get it right.
That's the guy
that wrote it.
that's funny. When I travel to rehearsal to to practice the Rush material with the guys. I travel, it's a good hour to get there, so I have some time. And I always want to do my rudiments and warm up before I practice, right, you know, and play, because we're playing at, now we're playing and we're playing and trying to do the songs right. You know, this isn't a work, you know. So I would, once I'm playing Tom Sawyer, so I have a free hand and I use one stick and I play on the seat next to me. And by the time I'm there, I'm comfortably warmed up because I'm just doing Tom Sawyer fill, you know, right, just at 16th, you know, just playing with one hand. And, you know, I'm working all day and then I go, and usually it takes me about an hour to really feel comfortable and warmed up and ready to go. So that's one of the songs that I would use to once I know that my, you know, the rudiments are smooth, you know, the 16ths are nice and
right. Even. It's a good litmus test to make sure that everything's being played evenly and smoothly.
Yeah,
that's the name of the game with this stuff. If it's not smooth, it's obvious and it's going to be a train wreck.
Boy, and it's funny, you know, his latest videos, you know, show him practicing, you know, warming up before he rehearses, and I think it was Getty that mentioned, you know, he's the only person I've ever known to really warm up before he, you know, he practices to just to practice. And then, you know, so he's limber and he's warmed up and ready to, you know, ready to go. I guess he always liked to come prepared. It looked like Neil always really was on point.
I think, yeah. Well, it really mattered to him to make sure that he could do it the proper way, you know. That and the fact that he probably had this arthritis situation for a little longer than maybe he'd let on, and if you know anyone with arthritis, you know that the key to not becoming a stone is to keep moving, you know,
right,
and just to loosen up before you do anything that's going to require some real effort.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh boy, totally. Yeah.
Do you have any specific memories of his playing, like either when you saw him live or there's something specifically in a song or a group of songs that you hearken back to on a regular basis?
You know, really, I was fascinated with Powell Windows, and I was fascinated with Mystic Rhythms, and hence the name of the project. Steve, myself, and, you know, Paul, we got together and did Mystic Rhythms. To me, was the most fascinating thing, really, to me, and the main reason why it's, I feel that the bass drum is the hook. So the bass drum is playing quarter notes and it hooks everyone. Naturally, as a human, like, we get hooked onto something, and I think it's an easy hook. I just found it fascinating watching him play in a vest, because I you know, when the video came out, it was like, what?
Yeah.
And I was really very impressed with the combination of electronics, and it just really stood out to me. I was blown away. To say the least, you know, like most of everybody.
Yeah, like we all were.
Yeah. And it's weird. It's just, for some reason, you know, and it goes down really because I didn't have confidence with drumming. I wasn't a good drummer when I was watching Rush and Neil play, and I didn't know what I was doing really. So I had the chance to hide that with electronic drums, and I took to the sounds of the electronic drums, and I thought it was fascinating. And then when he started, I mean, you know, it was happening. This was the 80s, you know, electronics were coming out, keyboards, and it was just, I if I wasn't a drummer, I would have turned into a piano keyboard player, because I'm fascinated by the sounds and the ambient effects. I know Alex was a little against it. He's like, hey, what am I supposed to play?
Yeah, it's funny. The first album I picked up actually was Signals.
Gotcha.
And that's at the time where the keyboards actually started to pick up, and he started taking the back seat. And from the time I got that album, I immediately started going to their back catalog, and then I realized exactly how insanely good Alex was as a guitarist. And how much the band had changed. But that's one of the things, though. The band had its periods, and it's one of those rare bands where each album was so different that you could almost, if all of the songs were splayed out onto the floor, just by listening to the songs, you could categorize them into what album they were on.
Mm.
You know, but yeah, and you notice if you collected some of the live stuff that initially Neil's drum solo would sort of be sort of the same solo, but then just be added to. You know, like if you listen to All the World's a Stage, and then you listen to Exit Stage Left, it's clear that there are parts there that are the same, because he wouldn't just wing it. It was something that was prepared. You know, it was actually written. You know, very orchestral. And some of those things, even years later, you know, again, Time Machine. You know, it would just be added to. He was a very interesting guy in the fact that he was never really satisfied. You know, he never fell into a comfort zone. He was always looking to improve. You know, and I think we could do with more of that. You know, from more musicians. Look, I love an AC/DC song just as much as the next guy, but they're pretty much the same songs. AABA rock stuff. Mm. You know, not a hell of a lot for us to chew on.
I wonder if the push from the industry kind of helped tone them out a little bit in the direction that they chose to go. Or would they have come up with those songs anyway without the big producer, big money guy is looking for them to play more pop songs, right? Isn't that what they were wanted to do? And
it's certainly the direction that they wanted to push them into.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they had the original self-titled album, and it seemed like that was the direction they were going to go into. And then as soon as John Rutsey was out of the picture, and they put Neil into the seat, it was an entirely different band immediately, and they were already not happy with where it was going. And two albums went by, Fly By Night and Caress of Steel, and it just seemed that things were, you know, going in the wrong direction. And then when 2112 came out, and it was a surprise that people actually identified with it, and that's what really saved them from just being another one of those rock bands, which they might have been a one-hit wonder. They might have just simplified things, and maybe they would have had a similar amount of success, but they would have been a very much different band, and we would have lost something very special because of that.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Well, you know, I pretty much asked you what I wanted to ask. I could sit here and talk to you all day, because you're a great player. I mean, you're always downplaying how well you play, but in order to play what it is that's required to be in the band that you're in, it's a tall order, you know. And so you're a great drummer, and I'll tell you, you guys really play the songs the way they should be played.
That's very kind of you.
It's a tremendous show that you do. You know, and
we're fans. That's, you know, we're fans, and it's just from the heart. I had the opportunity to you know, really kind of privately take lessons from Neil, and that was really my secret little thing that I always did. I always just I watched like a hawk, and I just took a liking to him as a person, his style, you know, the music, the lyrics that came out. And and you know, it's funny because the first number of years that I was watching Rush, I didn't know that Neil was writing anything. You know, right. I think a lot of people maybe didn't know that. I surely didn't know that. And was blown away once I learned a few years into being a fan that he wrote the lyrics. I don't know if I told you my Howard Ungerleiter story.
No.
So in the 90s, I started getting into lasers. So I was doing like laser lights, you know, little parties and, you know, sweet 16s and, you know, DJing and doing kind of laser stuff. And I wanted to, you know, meeting Steve Longo, the guitarist for Mystic Rhythms, I had the ability to do graphics with the laser, you know. So I had Running Man, you know, like Digital Man, you know, they got the running guy, he's running.
Yes.
And I had that, and I had all these different cool little things I made. I did a tribute to my wife, little thing back then, and it was Different Strings, you know, the song.
Yes.
So I made a little thing, and I made a show to, you know, a show to the song. It was, you know, 3 minutes or so, is it? So a short song.
That's cool.
And I decided, you know what, I got to find some Rush stuff, see if I can find some logos on the internet. So I did some searching and I found the company. It said Rush logos and whatever. So I called it and I said, hey, hi, I'm looking for you know, some designs and patterns that I could use in my program to make some Rush shows. So she said, hold on please. And then a guy gets on the phone. And hi, my name's Howard. How can I help you? And I'm speaking with him for 10 minutes, not knowing I was speaking with really Howard Ungleiter. Okay.
Wow.
He's like, who's this? Hi, my name's Adam. You know, I have the Pangolin software. He's like, oh, really? You got Pangolin, top of the line. I was like, yeah, you know, we're chatting. And I said, yeah, you know, I'm in a Rush tribute band and I'm looking to do, you know, to make some logos to the songs and stuff. You know, I already have one for Different Strings. He's like, really? Send it to me. So I sent it to him. And he was doing a show. This was the Vapor Trails tour, their first show when Neil came back.
Sure.
So he was doing the show up in Montage Mountain. And he said, hey, Adam, you know, we're looking for a laser guy. You're looking for a job? And this, and I was like, what? Yeah. So he's like, hey, meet me an hour before the show. And I had tickets to the show. I went over there and I met him. He was, you know, he was a little late. They had some technical issues. So I'm waiting up front and I go, and I finally chat with him, and oh my God, I was blown away. I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God, I don't know, what do I do? But he did ask me a question. First off, really nice gentleman. Oh man, was I blown away. He's a busy guy and he knows a lot about lighting, I'll tell you, to say the least.
Yeah.
He's designed sets not only for Rush, but for I don't know how many bands he's done stuff, but he's designed his own like lighting board. He played this thing like a piano, man. It was just unbelievable. But they were looking for someone who knew how to repair lasers, and I don't know anything about repairing anything. I could just know how to use the program and software and set it up and and, you know, and asked if I had backup, and I didn't have any backup too. You know, I spent whatever I could on purchasing a $8,000 laser. Yeah, shit, so expensive at the time. So I didn't get the job, but he let me spend the whole with two of my friends and my wife, the whole show at the board. With him, and I stood right next to him as he played the board and the lights, and I was just blown away. It was the most it was such a fantastic feeling, just sitting there with the crew and watching them work and put on show, and I was right next to him. I was blown away. And when the show ended, obviously, you know, like I think a lot of people, when the show ends, you know, all of a sudden you get tears because you connect with that music. That music is so connectable. And I don't know how anyone cannot fall in love with the material. There's so many albums out and so much material. You have to love at least a dozen of the songs because there literally are different types of genres in there.
Sure.
Besides their progressiveness, I mean, there's jazz, there's laid back, there's ambientness, there's everything, in my opinion, that ever, hence the numerous bands that have replicated and dedicated their comments as well on their albums, Dream Theater, Foo Fighters, you know, these guys, you know.
Right. We know that Danny Carey of Tool has quite an affinity.
I so appreciate you making those kind words. You know, I'm a fan like everybody else, and thanks a lot for showing up to the show that you did. I had a chance to play three times at the Paramount, and those were the best three shows I've ever had, despite some of the technical difficulties. I surely admit.
Yeah,
that
I was
went down.
I was there that one night where the fire alarm went off.
I heard that the bar stool hit the fire alarm and the fire alarm went off.
Perfect storm. They put it in exactly the wrong place. It was just about head height, and somebody must have leaned back.
After the fire chief came and gave us back the okay to play, I think we opened with Xanadu, I think, and During that time, anyway, by the way, it was my birthday, and
I remember.
Everybody stood up. They sang happy birthday to me. It was such a great,
yeah, it was great.
Just a great honor. Thanks for being part of that crowd and that night. That was really a fun show.
Well, you know, when you guys ramp it back up again and you're going to be in the area, please let me know. I'd love to see you again, because now you're the only game in town. Because, you know, not only are you a great tribute band, but you're going to have to be the ones that carry it on, because obviously the band can no longer be since Neil has passed. And
yeah,
you know,
it's
you know, here's like to him.
Right.
You know?
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough. I was very saddened, still saddened.
I can't believe it's over 6 months already.
Imagine, I hope his family is just all well and healthy.
Yes,
That's just, all the blessings go out to them, you know. But I definitely miss, and I surely, like the rest of us, miss, you know, the music, the shows. Oh my God, how many shows did they do? That's why, you know, and the other thing is live bands and recorded albums, they were amazing live. I mean, amazing live. There are bands that just can't do what they're doing, and they... you know, and kudos to, you know, to all three of them. But, you know, Geddy, man, you know, doing all those parts, man, that's amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Neil writing the lyrics and stuff, you know, and Alex filling in the whole soundscape, and just being part of the three of them was just, man. It's nice to get to know you because of Rush. And that's in between Rush is us, right?
Right.
So that's kind of a cool thing. My friend Steve Longo mentioned
that's a very cool. Yeah, I'm stealing that
cool.
one.
I have to say, anyone I've ever come across that knows who Rush is really, really a cool person, and they I don't know. It always seems to be a connection there.
Yeah, you know what you do like. As far as artistic expression goes, really does say a lot about you. And the Rush fan and the fan of Neil, you know, particularly because we are drummers, we're a pretty exclusive club, but we don't exclude anyone.
Yeah, you know? I thank you for having me on your show. Thanks for the chat. It was really much fun, and
it's always fun talking to you.
Thank you, Andrew. I saw some of the names that you have interviewed. You have some big drummers that you've spoke with. Man, there's some really cool people. I'm
well, I was fortunate to meet some of these people, firstly through Al Miller, my teacher of so many years, and through the Long Island Drum Center, being as Long Island really is a hotbed for drummers and musicians in general, because we are a suburb of New York City.
Gotcha.
It's so great to be able to, and there's other people that I would love to be able to talk to. I just gotta find the right. The right person to rub elbows with to get that.
Oh,
to
good
happen.
Luck with that. Oh, you know? Man, are you kidding? You got great recordings already, and some really great trumpets.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you've been enjoying, because I'm getting better at it.
Hey, you know, keep doing it. You know.
Well, that's it. You know, right now I'd love to be able to do it more, and maybe even at some point monetize it, because then it could only get better, you know. But in the meantime, I'm just having a blast talking to great guys like you, and even if I never make a dime doing it, this is a labor of love. I'm glad to be able to speak to guys like you.
Excellent.
So, all right. Well, this has been D's Practice Pod, and my guest again has been Adam Pliss, and it's always great to talk to you, and I hope to talk to you in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right, my friend. Thanks a lot.
Andrew, take care.
Take care.
See ya.